Let's open to Exodus chapter 5, verse number 19, as we get back into the story of what happened after Moses first met with Pharaoh and insisted that God, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, wanted Pharaoh to let the people go 3 days' journey eastward into the wilderness of Sinai to worship with their God. Pharaoh's response was, "You guys have got too much time on your hands. I'm going to take away the straw that I've been providing for your mud brick making operations. You'll have to get that yourself and keep up the same quota." Well, when the Israelis started suffering under the harsh taskmasters of the Egyptians over not making their quotas, they sent their leadership, the foreman of their industry, in to see the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh's response was, "Yes, I'm the one that made the decision, and you will provide the quota." Verse number 19 is the response of the foreman of Israel. The foreman of Israel, the people of Israel, saw that they were in trouble when they said, "You shall by no means reduce the number of bricks, your daily task each day." So now they realize we are in a mess. And the mess happened because we asked, through Moses and Aaron, to be given some time off to go out into the wilderness and worship this God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this God who goes by the Hebrew name He Who Is. Verse number 20. They, meaning these Israeli foremen, met Moses and Aaron, who were waiting for them as they came out from Pharaoh. So Moses and Aaron are there at the palace, and they are aware that this meeting is happening, and they are waiting to see how it goes. It didn't go well. So verse 21, they, meaning the foreman, said to them, "He who is, look on you and judge you, because you've made us stink in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants, and you've put a sword in their hand to kill us. So you guys need to be penalized by the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, because you've made things worse for us. You've even given them the reason to get rid of us if we don't live up to their standards." And this upsets Moses. And so he goes to God. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the books of Moses is that they represent Moses' emotion well. It doesn't try to make it look all pretty. It gives him warts and all, as some people have said. So Moses turned to He Who Is and said, "Oh, He Who Is, why have you done evil to this people?" Now, he's not meaning a moral evil. The word that is translated as evil here is something that's got to do with bad, rottenness, something stinky and horrible. So why have you allowed these bad things to happen to the people? Continuing, "Why did you ever send me?" Which has kind of a subtext there. "I didn't even want to come here, and now you made me do it, and these people are worse off than when I first arrived." Verse 23, "For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. So I thought I was signing on to get these people out of their bondage and their abusive situation, not to make it worse." So Moses is just speaking his mind. Now, he should have known better, because God warned him that Pharaoh was going to harden his own heart, and that eventually God would harden his heart, and that God was going to do all sorts of miraculous things before bringing the Israelis out of Egypt. So Moses should have known it wasn't going to be like a day event. One day in, say, Pharaoh, let my people go. And Pharaoh goes, oh, okay, sorry to have kept you guys so long. And then they'd all just head off to Sinai. It's not going to be that way, and Moses knew better than that. Verse 1 of chapter 6. But he who is said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. So God says, all right, Moses, you've now seen the baseline of the situation. You've seen that Pharaoh has no intention of letting the Israelis go. But I'm telling you that by the time the Israelis leave, Pharaoh will be demanding you leave. He will be insisting in very strong terms, get out of my country and never come back. Verse 2. So God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am he who is. I appeared to Abraham, to Yitzhak, to Jacob as El Shaddai. So the English Standard Version, which we're using for this time through, says God Almighty. And I think many of the English texts go that route. But I've shared with you before when we were going through the book of Genesis that Shaddai is actually a reference to the chest muscles. And the reason that some Hebrew translators in the 3rd century BC, when they were translating from Hebrew to Greek, the Septuagint, went with the sense of Almighty One is because if you've got big, strong chest muscles, that means you're mighty. And so God is the God who has the huge pecs, the great big chest muscles. But some of the translators during that same time period, making the Septuagint, the Greek Old Testament translation of the 3rd century BC, they went with a different phrase. The chest muscle area is also what we refer to as your bosom, your very core. And so in some circles, the Shaddai is all about the minus, the personal aspect of something. So we even use this term somewhat archaically in modern times, my bosom pal, meaning my best friend, the guy that I would give a hug to, right? So in this particular case, when I'm looking at the Greek Old Testament, I see that whoever it was that was assigned for the translation of this section, they used that same term we'd been seeing back in Genesis, and that is their God. That is, I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as their bosom God, their personal God, the God they could trust. So just be aware as we go through here, Shaddai can mean two different things, and the Hebrew people of the past have used both of them in referring to God. I happen to think one of them is more ancient, and that would be the more personal one. El Shaddai means my God. So, back to the text. Verse 3, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob as El Shaddai, but by my name, Yahweh, or He who is, I did not make myself known to them. So it's a reminder to Moses, this is a new name. This is a new thing. I did not have this name relationship with the patriarchs of the past. However, I'm the same God. Verse 4, I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. And we know that history from the book of Genesis. Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am he who is, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. So Moses, yes, the first reaction of Pharaoh was not a positive one, but I already told you it was going to be that way, because I know all things ahead of time. What I need you to communicate to the Israelis is that I'm still the same God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the Creator who made promises to those men that I was going to, 400 years after Israel ended up in Egypt, bring them out of Egypt, and I'm going to do it with great power and majesty. And so you, Moses, need to help the Israelis to trust me. So Moses is being pushed to be a mediator, to speak on behalf of both sides to the other. So when he's speaking to the Israelis, he is pushing for God's cause. And when he's speaking to God for the Israelis, he's pushing for the Israelis' cause. That's the sign of a good mediator. And of course, the book of Hebrews points out that there is no ultimate mediator between God and man except for the man God, Jesus Christ. So Jesus is the ultimate mediator. So Moses is kind of symbolic of what Jesus is ultimately. Verse 7, I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am he who is your God, who has brought you out from the burdens of the Egyptians. So here's God still saying to Moses, and it's going to be spoken to the Israelis from Aaron's lips, that God's intention is to make the Israelis his personal people. And he's going to be their personal God. And he will get them out of Egypt. They just need to trust him. Verse 8, I will bring you into the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am he who is. So Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel. Now again, Moses talks to Aaron in a private session, and then Aaron makes the public proclamation because he's a good verbal speaker. But they did not listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. They are not happy. They weren't happy before Moses came because they were under hard slavery. They don't get a day off. They work 7 days a week all year round. They don't get vacations, and their days are as long as necessary to get the slavery work done. And they're not getting paid. It is a horrendous situation. So they have lost hope. That's the broken spirit here. Verse 10. So he who is said to Moses, go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the people of Israel go out of his land. But Moses said to he who is, behold, the people of Israel have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me? For I am of uncircumcised lips. So Moses is a little bit exasperated. Are you kidding me? I can't get my own Israeli relatives to listen to me, and you think that Pharaoh will listen to me? Now, many of the commentaries give the idea that this uncircumcised reference by Moses is the idea that just not appropriate. because to be uncircumcised is to be inappropriate. But I wonder whether or not this might be Moses' way of saying, my tongue is still tied up. It's not been freed by cutting. So if Moses is constantly thinking about this speech impediment of his, then I could see that this would be more of the same of that concern of his. Irregardless, the point is that he doesn't think Pharaoh is going to listen to him, because why would he when the people won't listen to him? And so we move on with the next verse. It says here, but he who is spoke to Moses and Aaron, because remember, Aaron's the one that is going to be doing the actual talking during all of this, and is the spokesperson. So he needs to be brought in on all of this as well. And it's possible that Moses just simply passes on what he himself is told by God. All right, so he who is spoke to Moses and Aaron, gave them a charge about the people of Israel and about Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. At this point, it would appear that a later prophet author throws in a genealogy, because verse 13 is picked up again several verses later in saying, this is the Moses and Aaron that we're talking about. Here's their genealogy. So let's think of this as like a little bit of a commentary provided within the text itself. So verse number 14 says, these are the heads of their fathers' houses, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel. So here we have the list of the families, the top families of the tribe of Reuben: Hanuk, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. These are the clans of Reuben. The sons of Simeon: Yamuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yakin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. These are the clans of Simeon. So what we see here is a list starting with the firstborn and then going down that list as to who the clan head names are within the nation of Israel. So it's a partial genealogy. Then we get to the third-born son of Jacob or Israel, and we follow his genealogy. Verse 16, these are the names of the sons of Lawi, or Levi, according to their generations: Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. So those are the names of the children of Levi, and they become the names of the major family divisions, or the clans of the Levites. And we'll see that the responsibilities for taking care of the temple and, or the first the tabernacle and all the items that were involved in worship, are divided up between these three groups. And then we have a chronological bit of information, which gives a sense of apparently how long Levi lived, or possibly how old he was when a certain son was born, or something like that. It says the years of the life of Levi being 137. Or maybe it's the age he was when his last son was born. Something like that. The sons of Gershom were Libni and Shimei by their clans. The sons of Kohath, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Now this Kohath is the line that Moses and Aaron will come from. And so that's why it's important to see him in the list. Then we have again 133 years. When we see these years here, we can see that there's about 400 years between Israel coming into Egypt and Israel leaving Egypt. And each of the generations was well over 100 years in span. So it's 430 years total that they'll be in Egypt. And so the generations are much longer than 40 or 70 years. It's about 100 plus years. The sons of Merari, Mahli, and Mushi, these are the clans of the Levites according to their generations. Then we zoom back in on the Kohath line. Amram took as his wife Jochebed, his father's sister. And she bore him Aaron and Moshe. And the years of the life of Amram being 137 years. So Amram marries his father's much younger sister. And when you've got big families, because in some of the genealogies, we don't have all the names. We have key names. But in some families, there's so many family members that there's a lot of age difference between the eldest and the youngest. And so Amram ends up marrying his aunt, which was apparently his age. And that's the mom and dad of Moses and Aaron and Miriam. Verse 21 continues with the genealogy. The sons of Izhar, Korah, Nepheg, and Zikri. And Korah is going to be very important in a story later. That's why we see him here. He's a cousin of Moses and Aaron and Miriam who rebels against their leadership. And then the sons of Uziel, Mishael, Elzaphan, and Sithri. Then we get to the genealogy of Aaron himself. Aaron took as his wife Elishaba, and that's actually the same name of John the Immerser's mother. We usually say Elizabeth, Elishaba, pretty close to the same thing. The daughter of Amminadab and the sister of Nahshon. Now, the reason that's significant is because Nahshon will be listed as the leader of the Judah tribe during the Exodus. So he is the adult leader of Judah tribe at the time of the Exodus, and his sister is married to Aaron. And the tie-in between the Levite tribe and the Judah tribe is of interest to us because we know that Nahshon eventually becomes the ancestor of Jesus. You will see his name in the Matthew chapter 1 genealogy for Jesus. So we have here a tribe, and I should correct myself, it's actually going to be the legal line of Jesus. It'll be Joseph's family tree that Nahshon is the head of in particular. In the Luke genealogy, we will see that same line split at the time of Solomon and follow a Solomon brother and eventually become the genealogical line for Jesus. Okay, so I distracted myself there. I apologize for that. The point is that Aaron is married to the sister of the Judah tribe leader. So he is clearly well placed in leadership already within the tribal makeup of the Israeli people. Back to Exodus chapter 6, verse 24. The sons of Korah, Asher, Elkanah, and Abiasaph, these are the clans of the Korahites. And that line seems to later show up in the book of Samuel. being important for that prophet. Verse 25, Eleazar, Aaron's son, took as his wife one of the daughters of Putiel, and she bore him Phinehas. And so Eleazar is going to be an important priest in Israel's history. He's the priest of the conquest. Phinehas will be a priest later in the time of the judges. So these are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites by their clans. And then the commentary wraps up with verse 26. These are the Aaron and Moses to whom he who is said, bring out the people of Israel from the land of Egypt by their hosts. And that wrap-up verse tells us why this genealogy was inserted at this place. Because whoever it was that was writing later, probably in the time of the judges, wanted us to see the tie-in genealogically with other stories of importance later in the history of Israel. Now we get back to the actual text, I think, of Moses writing. Verse 27 first. It was they who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, about bringing out the people of Israel from Egypt, this Moses and this Aaron. Then back to Moses' story. On that day when Moses spoke to, when he who is spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, he who is said to Moses, I am he who is. Tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you. So now we're getting ready for the next time that Moses and Aaron goes in and says to Pharaoh, let my people go. And this time we'll really get started with all of the special supernatural events of the Exodus. So let's go ahead and just mark our place right there. And this is where we'll next get back into the Word.